You wouldn't have to have been living under a rock with all that's been going on to have missed a pretty major global incident that took place and continues to unfold in South America. Living in kind of a Western society, 2020 Australia, with the relative social stability that affords, can make the idea of an overthrow of government, one that parallels the Russian Revolution, Cuba, even Vietnam, something really hard to comprehend. But believe it or not, starting in September last year, an orchestrated attempt to overthrow socialist president Nicolas Maduro by a rebellion of former military personnel took shape and has continued to unfold in a situation becoming stickier and stickier, thanks in large part by the influence and involvement of the United States. Luckily enough, this morning we're joined here today by Sydney-based political analyst focusing on Latin American politics, Dr. Rodrigo Acuna, to give some insight into something receiving pretty limited attention in Australia. Rodrigo, in as simple terms as you can put it for those of us with a pretty limited understanding of 21st century Venezuela, what's the social and political landscape been in recent years to have kind of allowed for such a dramatic cause to start to take shape?
Well, if I can try and be as succinct as possible, I think we have to go back to the late 1990s when President Hugo Chavez came to power and radically began to shift the country's policies in terms of where the oil revenues were allocated. Essentially, the government spent a lot of money on the poor of the country, building a lot of housing, public housing, health, and education. At a regional level, Venezuela historically had been a very close ally of the United States. In OPEC, it had often lobbied for a decline or the lowering of oil prices, which would obviously benefit the United States and its allies. All of that changed under the Chavez administration. And those policies continued until this day under President Nicolas Maduro. Now, obviously, there are many criticisms which can be made of both of those governments, and I'm happy to go into those criticisms. But I think the most important thing to understand about Venezuela is that the local opposition, which is really historically a small elite, which is even racially quite different to the rest of the population, they did not learn to compromise or negotiate with this new administration. So publicly, they declare that they're committed to the electoral process when they think that they can actually obtain victories. But behind closed doors, they have actually been committed to both projects. They have been committed to the electoral process in Venezuela when they think they can actually win. But when they can't, they have been working, they have been receiving money from the United States,
right,
and they have often tried to buy generals off, pay off generals within the military to carry out a coup d'etat. Now, they actually did this successfully for about 48 or 72 hours in 2002 when they overthrew Chavez and had him briefly kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And they tried that on several occasions, but their biggest problem is that they haven't managed to buy off the rank and file of the military. And that, I think, is explained by the fact that for all of its problems and inefficiency, the government's programs to benefit large sections of the underclass, the poor in Venezuela, have had a level of effect. They have been less effective in the last few years because of the harsh U.S. Sanctions on the country.
Right.
To bring the story up to date, the latest plot is sort of quite similar to what the Bay of Pigs, what occurred in the Bay of Pigs.
I was going to make reference to that, yeah.
Yes, yes. In the 1960s, where a group of mercenaries headed by a mercenary company called Silver Corp USA basically sent 62 mercenaries into the country with the ludicrous plot of trying to either kidnap or assassinate the president of Venezuela. But when they arrived on the coast of Venezuela, they actually found a population that was not willing to support them at all. And in one small town, they were actually captured by local fishermen and the local police.
Yeah, right.
So their attempt to go in there and carry out some sort of Rambo-style or Expendables style, mercenary operation.
It was a failed attempt, wasn't it? It's led it to a couple of where they've been held a couple of US kind of former officials, and given kind of like you said, there's been major support of the opposition in the US, and they're receiving the bulk amount of attention in kind of the Western world, and given it's a socialist state, at least in governance, like you've said, is this an example you would think of maybe like Western rhetoric or just kind of capitalist agenda receiving the priority in the global media, would you think?
Of course. I mean, that's the fact that a very prominent, the former Secretary of the United Nations Human Rights Council, Mr. Alfred Maurice de Sayas, he tabled a very detailed report in late 2018 on the effects of U.S. economic sanctions on Venezuela. Mm-hmm. And according to his estimates, about 100,000 Venezuelans have actually died in the last few years because of the harsh economic sanctions on the country, in particular the lack of access to medical supplies, which has now been, an impact of the U.S. sanctions. So the local opposition, now obviously not all of them, but a noticeable part of certainly pretty much a part of the traditional hard right Latin American, part of a hard political right. And they have a vision that they simply cannot negotiate with a left-wing government. So they are completely determined to try and overthrow the government, and they're going to try and do that either through the electoral process, like I said, or through the use of a coup d'etat or paying international mercenaries.
That's a tale of two extremes. You would think, how beneficial would you think that kind of implementing, like I said, kind of Western ways of life, capitalist kind of society, would this be beneficial, you would think, for Venezuela at this time, or is that just something we would think as people living in Australia and pretty used to kind of a capitalist world?
Well, I mean, Australia, certainly we are part of the capitalist world, but we also historically have a state which has invested in public housing, in the public healthcare system, in public education. So we are not really part of a sort of hard capitalist world like the United States, or don't even think about Latin America. We are actually closer to European, or the sort of Scandinavian model of capitalism. Mm. And that's created a lot more social stability. You have a lot more social mobility in a country like Australia. That is simply not the case in Venezuela. If you are part of the poor, the disenfranchised, chances are quite high that's where you're exactly going to die. So this disconnection that exists between the Venezuelan political and economic elite with the rest of the population means that they don't understand the political project of Chavismo, and they have found that even for all of its faults and internal contradictions, they have found it difficult to defeat Chavismo through the electoral process. So I don't see them coming to power anytime soon, unless they are able to compromise some of their visions. Or the other thing which I think will happen is that the sanctions will become completely unbearable for most people in the country,
right?
And they'll decide the project that they have been supporting for the last 2 years was too costly.
Similar to that, maybe the fall of the USSR, where kind of what the public gets jack of it and essentially kind of takes things into their own hand, not necessarily in kind of violent efforts, but just kind of as a community, yeah.
Problem is that the political project of the government, of the socialist government, has deep roots in the communities. So what was there was a document which these mercenaries, together with the opposition, there was a plan that they were going to implement if they were successful. And they were talking about essentially getting rid of something like 1 in 5 members of the armed forces and really carrying out a level of political cleansing, assassinations, massive human rights violations akin to, even it's actually even worse than the Pinochet regime in Chile. So I think that the fact that they have this sort of mentality, that they they can't negotiate with the political left, they simply just have to wipe them out, means that there is going to be conflict in the country because the Chavistas, the grassroots organizations which have participated and benefited in this process, they are going to fight back.
How would you suggest this may have been? I'd read a couple of the articles you were nice enough to share with me, so thank you very much for that. How poorly do you think that maybe the USS has kind of handled this situation, especially considering there are a couple of Americans detained in Venezuela at the moment? Is it overstating it to draw comparisons, like you said, the Bay of Pigs, or maybe things that went down in Vietnam late in the last century?
The comparisons, I think, are completely valid because the result of harsh economic sanctions against Cuba, the result of attempting to assassinate the Cuban leadership, in particular Fidel Castro, it really went into sort of ridiculous levels. And all it did was actually just harden the government and the political project in power. It completely polarized the society. You were either in favor of the revolution or you were against the revolution. And of course, these level of polarization can at times, it's often not healthy. But I think what you need to do is precisely look at who are the key players, who actually holds the political and economic power.
Right.
And unfortunately, in this case, it is the United States, and the local opposition does have a substantial amount of financial backing. So unless the U.S. decides to change course and tries to actually listen to people like, for example, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter, who has in the past traveled to Venezuela and has observed and has actually spoken well of the Venezuelan electoral process, unless more moderate and sensible voices like that are listened to, the only thing that's going to happen is a polarization of society.
So you made reference to that kind of similar coup attempts in 2002, and assuming, like you've said, that maybe the opposition may not be able to regain power through democratic means, is it likely that we may continue to see these coup attempts and these more extremist attempts for years to come in Venezuela?
I think so. I mean, I don't see evidence highlighting that that things are going to take a dramatic turn. Now, the opposition leader, Juan Guaido, he has now been challenged by his own coalition. And they are in chaos because one minute they think they can actually succeed and buy off enough generals and carry out a coup d'etat like was done in Chile in 1973 or in other parts of Latin America during the Cold War. But then they fail. So it's very difficult to see there being a political
where stability might come from eventually.
Exactly, because they are completely locked into this mental framework, this ideological framework that they cannot negotiate with the political left in Latin America. And if we go back to the Cold War, I mean, that's one of the biggest problems of the region is a lack of compromise and a lack of listening to voices in society which are saying, look, we're happy to do business with the United States. We're happy to have businesses play a considerable role in the economy. But they need to be socially responsible. They need to pay a certain level of taxes. And it's unacceptable that we have in the case of Venezuela, one of the largest oil-producing countries in the world with incredible records of high records of poverty. That's... Now, this was the case even long before Chavismo came to power, which is something that, again, the Venezuelan political right fails to recognize.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Rodrigo, but we will have to move on, unfortunately. Thank you for your insight kind of into a very sticky situation. I will direct people to, I believe it's RodrigoAcuna.com if they want to read more about what you had to say about the issue, yeah?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rodrigo. Have a good week. Appreciate you coming on.